Hello everyone, welcome to the final episode of Tech 2030 podcast. My name is Renuka Racha, and as your host, I'm happy to welcome Alex Lawrence, Managing Editor of 6G World. Today, we will recap what happened in 2021 in terms of technology development in the midst of the pandemic and discuss what we can look forward for 2022 and beyond. Welcome, Alex, and I'm very thrilled to have you here.
Thanks very much. It's good to be here.
Alex, this year has been very interesting, and the pandemic certainly threw a monkey wrench in the state of things for businesses, common people, medical services, and government. But as the vaccinations got rolled out, things started looking better and stabilizing a bit. I think we learned a lot in real time how to manage this pandemic and also globally how to manage our day-to-day life as well as work life. So what is the key takeaways from your side as we discuss this next generation of communications, applications, and services that we envision going into the next decade?
Thanks. Yeah, there are a few things that leap to mind there. I mean, if you look back on what happened at the start of the pandemic with all the lockdowns and so on, you got a really drastic shift in how telecoms traffic patterns worked. Instead of having, you know, people going to their homes in the evenings, watching a bit of TV or Netflix or something, and then coming back into offices to work during the day, you got this sort of drastic growth in residential usage of broadband. And that was obviously both downstream, people, you know, streaming services, Netflix and so on, video calls, but also upstream with the producing of videos and that kind of thing. And depending on where you were, that growth in both downstream and upstream traffic was anywhere between 30% and 60%, almost overnight. And I think it was really impressive to see, you know, overall how the telecoms networks handled that and the fact that it didn't all just totally crash. I think that was, you know, to a good part attributable to the fact that telecoms has been involving you know, software-defined networks for a while and building those into their existing networks, first in 4G and more recently in 5G. And what that's done is enable the telcos to shift workloads closer to where they're needed. And that's been valuable. But I think the other thing that it did was really highlight the idea of access to broadband as a universal issue. And that's not just between different countries, but also between sort of urban and rural access and the cost of access as well, because for households that struggle with their income, for example, or with affording broadband and or mobile services and so on, the inequality in opportunity and information, I think, was just really brought out and sort of thrust into the limelight. And so I think over the course of the last year, we've seen a good deal of demands of whatever 6G ends up being, that it should have this coverage element. And that's partly a technology play, of course, but it's also a question of business models and how we make all of this work seamlessly together, not just for the telcos, the satellite players, the fixed broadband and so on, but also for the end users.
Yeah, that is true, that the democratization of communication and services and common things that people need in terms of, you know, support from the government or, you know, do businesses and so on, got very highlighted in this year, and I think there is more focus by all, you know, whether it is universities, industry, to address that need. So I think that's a very positive change or positive factor in this, even though we had to go through a really dark time with the pandemic.
There's kind of a corollary of that as well, which is I think what we're finding these days from some of the events I've been attending is that policymakers are starting to talk about telecoms and digital services in a different way to before. You know, in the past, it used to be treated very much like water or you know, arms or something like that. It's something to be taxed, something to make sure there's competition on, and beyond that, don't really worry. These days, I think because the societal impacts have been brought out so strongly, policymakers are much more aware that you can use the telecoms networks and the sort of digital services that they carry as the platform for building the economy, whether that's through education or trade or so on. And so in this past year, we've seen countries like Japan and so on talking not just about what they want their future digital services, if you like, to be, but they're talking about, you know, Japan 5.0. And this is the whole idea of a society where digital services and so on play a crucial part in making it work. I mean, arguably, that's already the case in most countries, but actually sort of having the government play a role in saying where that needs to go, rather than just leaving it to market forces, I think is a new piece. And that's going to open up a lot of opportunities for public-private collaboration, of course, but then also, I think, you know, how that turns into responsibilities for telcos and, you know, the private sector in terms of delivering on those public needs, I think could be a really interesting evolution over the next few years.
Okay, so one of the tenets of 5G is this industrial IoT or massive machine-to-machine communications. When the term Internet of Things was coined in 1999, it was largely conceptual. Now, you know, two decades later, everything from sensors in the home to smart buildings, parking lots, traffic management systems, sensors in farming for precision agriculture, you know, all depend on this IoT technology. So one of the key requirements is the low latency and the network capacity to be able to support so many devices real time. And this has been a huge topic, and also developments and almost some deployments in manufacturing and agriculture, you know. So is 5G is living up to its promise, or we think, you know, there's more to do, and then, you know, some of these applications and services need to be, you know, enhanced for 6G?
Wow, that's a big question. The best I can say is it really depends. I mean, at the moment, for example, I was talking to a company recently that is able to work with these IoT sensors for very remote places. For example, monitoring oil wells or, you know, mines in the remote parts of the jungle, that kind of thing. Even keeping track of boats on the River Amazon, this kind of thing. And it's using a very narrow band IoT sent up to satellites. Now, I mean, this is, you know, financially feasible only because they are using very, very small amounts of data sent periodically to do this. But I think that shows that that you can deliver useful services without the need for high bandwidth, low latency, and so on, especially in the Internet of Things. And you know, a lot of the way that things are managed and the services that evolve will depend on that sort of cost balance between, you know, is it worth my while in terms of the data, in terms of the creation through services and software and so on, and is it secure? I think there are some really interesting things going on behind the scenes in, you know, at the moment. You know, arguably you could call it 5G. Some of the narrowband IoT maybe is even, you know, arguably 2G. But things, for example, like moving responsibility for security away from devices could be a really big thing, because there's no guarantee that, you know, a physical device is unhackable. If you have a very cheap sensor, let's say on a toy or a dog collar, there's no way that people can necessarily afford to be putting in the latest security patches and so on there, because it's only a very simple device. If instead you can move that, you know, responsibility for the securing it one hop away, for example, you know, right towards the edge of the telecoms network, and be able to monitor and manage it from there, then that's a really big opportunity.
Yeah, I think much everything that we talk to or use and, you know, watch is going to be connected. And I think, you know, that leads to a very interesting question. A lot has been, you know, done and a lot more predicted with the use of this data using AI and machine learning and several applications, from autonomous driving to public safety and also health monitoring. And so this is and that also evolved with several solutions like mobile edge computing or multi-access edge computing. So that makes this whole use case or applications work efficiently, right? Otherwise, you can't have all this data, you know, going from one end of the world to the other end, where there is the cloud service, and then be able to respond real time and have the decision making capabilities and so on. So that has been one of the interesting developments in 2021, with so much around AI, ML, and also particularly with you know, gaming and so on. I'd like to hear your thoughts there, Alex.
Yeah, the whole question of data management is a huge piece, and honestly, I don't think it's a piece that we've talked about enough. The generation of the data is one thing, but then what on earth do you do with it? For a lot of companies, it's very interesting. They've been talking about big data in the past, and now their challenge is how they translate all of this big data into stuff that is small but relevant information. So kind of stripping out a lot of the signal, and actually a lot of the noise rather, and finding the signal within it. And obviously that depends a great deal upon who you are. So if you're, for example, let's say the Siemens wind turbine companies, they performed a pivot quite a while ago from selling wind turbines to essentially sort of selling the management of them. So they will sort of gather together all the information from these things, which gives them a good idea of how well these things are performing, when they're liable to need maintaining, and so on, in a way that any individual owner of these devices couldn't manage. And so that's sort of leading to big savings for the actual owners of these wind farms, but also it's great for Siemens. The question is, I guess, the kinds of things that Siemens is looking for from this information is likely to be very different from, let's say, what a national grid company might want to be finding out, or even, let's say, a local campaigner in favour of, you know, either more wind farms or fewer of them, or so on. So, you know, I think there's a question about, you know, how we can take information that's in the hands of these different organisations and be able to share that. Companies like Deutsche Telekom have started, and KPN in the Netherlands, have started creating these data hubs, essentially where you can get you know, the opportunity to transact and have access to other companies' data in a way that's sort of secure and depersonalized and so on. And I think particularly if we're looking at training artificial intelligence in the future, having things that aren't just theoretical data sets to train them with, but actual live performance data from different kinds of IoT or different scenarios in different countries is going to be absolutely critical. So, you know, these haven't gained a lot of talk yet, other than sort of discussions around we need to have training data for our AIs. But there are ways out there to do it. They're very embryonic at the moment, and I think there's still the question about what kind of value you can attribute to that data in order to make the exchanges happen. But yeah, that's hopefully coming over the next few years, and that could be revolutionary in how AI is used and how and what we can use it for.
Collecting data is always is a double-edged sword, I think. One is, you know, you need the data for, you know, for what you said, you know, training the AI algorithms, the machine learning part of it. But then it is also the other aspect of privacy, right? And one of the things that AI and machine learning is being used is in gaming. And now with AI, you can keep an eye on how the gamer is experiencing, what he's experiencing, how he's responding. And then, so that leads to a question about, you know, how much access to the behavioral data is gained in this way, and is it right?
Yeah, it is a fascinating question. And I think one of the challenges that we're seeing is we've got at the moment online, the ruling paradigm is about attention and about just engagement as well. And if you're getting companies that rely upon those for their money, which is basically the advertiser-driven model that, you know, Facebook or Google or so on runs on, then it's very dangerous for the end users in some ways. I mean, it's great that you get free services, but obviously the downside of that is that these companies are, you know, soaking up information about their users to monetize, and that's how they make their money. And what that's doing is essentially you're giving up implicitly this information. Now there's a kind of a big argument to be had over how much of it is, you know, your information, in inverted commas. You know, I mean, if you press a particular button on Google, is that Google's information? Probably yes, but it is relevant to you if it can be linked to your personal identifier. So there are a couple of things here. I mean, one of those is there's this big question around identity management and being able to link information back to individuals. And I think there could be a really big market in future for services that are maybe, you know, like an app on your phone or something like that, that can sit there and act as an intermediary almost, like, or a concierge between you and the rest of the internet. So, you know, something that can, you know, authenticate you and say, you know, this is a person who is old enough to be receiving your services, and they can pay for them if that's what's required, and all this kind of thing.
It is also that, you know, there is a huge need for regulations and laws about, so all of these are well way behind, right? The technology is leaping forward, but the aspects of how to use, what is legal, what is not, and all of that is kind of needing to go accelerated to determine this, right? I think the governments have not responded in a timely fashion to address this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that we could talk about there. I mean, partly, you know, there's an argument for saying that things like the internet have taken off as they have done because they've had a very light touch regulation. The challenge is that we've got these incredibly complex environments now, which have been successful, in fairness, but where, you know, they're coming from a position where, you know, regulation is kind of seen as the baddie and anti-industry or something. Whereas in fact, I think, you know, there's an opportunity to have a very different kind of industry, which sort of takes this idea of you know, getting value from a person's data and turns it on its head. So if I was recently listening to the CEO of Klarna, Sebastian Siemiatkowski, and he was talking about the idea of being able to, you know, prove to users that when they are sharing their data with a company, they are getting value from that, and, you know, having the ability to opt out, I think, of something like that and decide for yourself whether that value exchange is worth it. And as blockchain becomes more prevalent, then that is something where users could have a lot more granular control, or, you know, set up some basic principles, if you like, through an intermediary or a system, so that they can maybe not be managing every single data transaction and deciding yes or no, but at least have some confidence that they've got that power of choice.
Yeah. So talking about these unintended consequences, right? So one of the things is also with this huge explosion of devices, you know, there is more power radiated, more emissions, pollution, and industrial waste, right? E-waste, which is basically electronic waste. So that has also been a big, consideration in this year in terms of whether it is standards, discussions, or university research or nonprofit organizations, you know, about environmental sustainability and so on. So where are we now in 2021, and what can we look forward in the next couple of years around that environmental sustainability activities in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. This is potentially huge. I mean, as things stand, you know, there was a McKinsey report recently that was talking about how, you know, energy costs at the moment are between 5% and 7% of most telcos' operating costs, which is huge. And, you know, if you start to introduce more AI, more blockchain, and more complexity, then, you know, if things carried on as they are, that's only going to rise. You know, you densify the networks to be able to carry more traffic, again, that goes up. And at the moment, you know, telecoms counts towards 2-3% of countries' overall energy budget. It's unsustainable, and a lot of countries are starting to see this. Again, I'll just refer to Japan, because I think they've got an amazing aspiration to drop actual energy consumption to 1% of its current levels by 2050. I mean, that sounds bonkers, but there are similar initiatives in other places, and the challenge is going to be really rethinking drastically how everything works and how to make it more sustainable. So there are a lot of different projects being worked on. The NGMN has been really good at organizing the telcos around this to talk about green sort of 5G to 6G transition. And they're looking at everything from being able to work out how every component in their network behaves in terms of its energy consumption, just to try and figure out, for example, well, you know, what if you can turn these processors off for 50% of the time? I mean, that's going to save them a huge amount of money if they can start to drill down into these things and manage it better.
So the another topic is this convergence of, you know, various technologies. I think 6G, you know, in 5G, there is deployment in millimeter wave, which is higher frequencies than the 6 gigahertz and so on. And 6G is looking at the higher spectrum of the terahertz and so on. Not only that, you know, there's this convergence of communications, computing, control, localization needed for all of these applications to work. And, you know, and whether it's a smart city or a smart manufacturing and so on. And I think, you know, it requires a new thinking and design right from the concept point of view to bring them, not to just add them as a afterthought, right? And I think, you know, more and more as we see healthcare applications and other, you know, applications related to smart city and all, and smart agriculture, I think, you know, there's a realization about, you know, thinking from the, you know, including all the requirements, all the needs, all the aspects together in a design. And I think that's a welcome change in the industry. And, you know, I think that's something to look forward to in 2022 and beyond.
So. Yeah, that's true. I mean, we've talked about some of the pressures coming from governments to, for example, manage energy better and so on. But you're right. People talked about 5G as being an industrial generation of telecoms technology. And when it launched, I think arguably it hasn't been that. You know, it's been the thing that consumers have taken up faster than anything else. But still we're seeing news articles talking about, you know, Factory X has now started using 5G, which, you know, honestly, if it were being rolled out that drastically, we just wouldn't have, because that wouldn't be news. And, you know, a good deal of this is simply because other industries who have wanted to be involved, you know, haven't known how to at the appropriate times. You know, we've seen organizations like the 5G ACIA for heavy industries, 5GAA for the automotive associations, coming together and starting to talk about how they can interact. And in future evolutions of 5G, then, you know, there may be much more relevance for them in terms of what 5G can do and deliver for them. But really, it's because they've had that practice with 5G, now they're kind of braced and ready and able to start inputting into what 6G needs to be in order to work for them, how it should evolve, and getting a voice, you know, right from the early days. And I think that's going to be a very different thing from telecoms in the past, which has basically been sort of our engineers and our academics in a silo somewhere, coming out and going, we've made this, what can we do with it? You know, if we can actually sort of get to a 6G that appears commercially with business models and trading partners and so on clearly defined and ready to run, that's going to be huge.
It has been an interesting conversation, and thank you, Alec, for joining me. And you know, this is we look forward to working together and seeing more discussions in 2022. This is the final episode for this season, and I would like to wish you all a happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Kwanzaa wherever you are. Thank you.